Tacky Talk time. It's Representative Tacky Chan once again for the 2nd Norfolk District here in Quincy with our Friday update. Tacky!
Yo!
This it's is cold. More like it. Last time we talked, you had a suit and tie on with Dr. Abe.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Last time I was doing unrolling of standing grants and domestic violence grants from Department of Public Safety. Lieutenant Governor had hosted a virtual public announcement, and I was selected with the Chief Keenan and Sue Chandler and Dove to say some words about the grant they received. So they had a very limited press conference. Normally what the governor does, they like to do regional press conferences, right? So they would bring the team along, whether it be the governor, lieutenant governor, secretary of public safety staff, and make announcements for the grants, Shannon grants and domestic violence grants separately throughout the state and communities, and do like regional, like, you know, they'll roll like 4 towns into one location, and they do announcement for the regional paper and all that, and you know, local cable access news. Unfortunately, because of the pandemic, they couldn't do that. So they did a monster call where they had like 100+ communities of representation on a call with a handful of folks from a couple of places to talk about how the grant will impact their work. So, you know, very appreciative for the Lieutenant Governor, Secretary of Public Safety, and all their staff for the work on getting these grants to the city, but also for highlighting Quincy this year. Through this very unusual situation of doing things through a virtual conference. So we know that was the reason I wore a tie. I didn't wear a tie just for you.
Oh, and I thought it was just for me. Well, you look very dapper for sure. But this is much more relaxed, definitely. Let's talk about the vaccine rollout or the lack thereof, Tacky, and the problems that have cropped up this week and how they're going to be fixed.
Yeah, as people have figured out by now, the priority list is an ever-changing element. And this is part of the frustration and confusion of what's going on. And frankly, I mean, I think we all know this rollout in Massachusetts has not been all that great. We are considered middle of the pack regarding rollout vaccine. Other people, other states have moved into, you know, almost consume all. But I think people need to understand that not every state's doing the same thing. The lack of a uniform methodology recommended by the federal government has resulted in states and in some cases towns and counties, depending on what state you live in, just going and doing whatever. So for example, if you're in Texas, it's wild, wild west, no pun intended. You literally can just go get a vaccine. Doesn't matter if you're congregate care or you're 14, you know, actually 18 because it's an age, but if you're 18 or you're in congregate care, it doesn't matter. So there's actually no prioritization for healthcare workers, no prioritization for people that are high risk. And you've seen that it's Florida as well, where they just decided not to worry about people in the front lines and just put this out to the general public, with seniors being the priority. And of course, they're the ones who have all kinds of problems because they didn't take any safety measures early. So the most vulnerable population there are dying, unfortunately, fastest and highest. Although it's interesting, people that we know that are living there because it's, you know, winter home, or they moved out for retirement, are behaving much better than their neighbors, I hear. Local Floridians, which is, I think, kind of interesting. They still take a recommendation from people up here on what to do in COVID. So, they get, I'm sure I'm not the only one, but they get, you know, notes back about, you know, appalled how, you know, people are behaving.
Well, like you've said all along, it's personal responsibility. You know, if you have the information, it's up to you to do with it as you choose.
Oh, that's exactly it. And this is kind of the same thing happened with COVID. It is voluntary in terms of the vaccine. So there's no mandated vaccine. The reason is because if it's not FDA-approved medication, we can't mandate you to get the vaccine because it's on an emergency use basis, which is causing some people some concerns, obviously, because they feel that it's only had a first round of clinical, well, actually third round of clinical trials, but a true one-third round. And that, you know, whether it's safe or not. And as the scene on the media, many doctors, many healthcare workers, people that you trust in government, people you trust that are celebrities, that are old folks, are taking the vaccine to try to encourage people that the odds of having anything negative happen is minuscule. And like anything, you always have a minuscule chance that something will go wrong. I mean, you can get sick on any number of medications, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, most of us don't, you know, penicillin, can have an allergic reaction to penicillin. but it's a very small amount of population that does. And this should hopefully be a smaller, even smaller percentage than those who have allergy to penicillin, which is essential. So the state logic on the onset was that they wanted an orderly distribution of vaccine, targeting the people who are the highest risk of having COVID first. I mean, people are either going to have high death rate because they're in an area where they're going to easily spread, such as congregate care. I mean, we also what happens in nursing homes and assisted living facilities. I mean, this ain't complicated.
It's a true tragedy, really.
Exactly. If anybody is trapped and can't move, where if you introduce one person, any person introduces the virus, it's pretty much game over. The whole thing goes out of control quickly. And, you know, this includes places like group homes with people with developmental disabilities. People with developmental disabilities have serious medical conditions. And even if they're not over the age of 60, 65 or 70, it will kill them equally quickly if it moves in that kind of setting. So, you know, autism schools obviously have not been able to function properly because of this fact. So unfortunately, what has really happened was because once they put a priority list out, everybody wanted to move up and down the list. And people were missing from the list. And it was insufficient clarity on the list. And they had such a short, truncated time frame to try to get everyone vaccinated in rapid time based on the estimates given by the federal government on how much vaccine we would have, which is not the amount of vaccine we actually have.
Right. Because it was a perfect storm of a mess, basically. Yeah.
That's correct. The timeline is based on how much vaccine we have. We don't have the vaccine the federal government said we were going to have. And we know that Pfizer and Moderna is pumping it out as fast as again, 24/7. We know that President Biden has used the Defense Act to get the secondary products, associated vaccines, such as vials, syringes, all those other products you need to administer vaccine. He's working now to get medical plans to make those under the War Act. You know, this administration continues to get input from various people regarding where they should be on the list. This has not been an endless input process that's been ongoing since the list came out. And as people saw, we talked about this actually with Dr. Abe earlier in the week. We filmed on Tuesday, was it?
Yes.
The days blend. You know, I was talking about age 65 and how we capture age 65, even there in the workforce, at least you get the most vulnerable people in the workforce taken care of first, which they did change actually after we talked on Tuesday.
I'm glad they finally listened to us, Jackie. You know, so they should just ask us in the first place.
Yeah, apparently, my last call secretary said, as I was trying to explain the 65 age issue, had a bit of merit. Whether I was only, I don't think I was the only one to express this. I cannot take credit for this one. Obviously not the only one to express this concern. But I mean, you know, they moved from the bottom phase to tier two of phase two after age 75 above, and people with two serious health conditions, because I can't say the word C properly.
Comorbidity.
No. Two people have had serious health conditions.
Okay.
We're gonna run with that. And, you know, they're obviously doctor-verified health conditions.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
So I was just actually on the phone with Boss B.I. Leahy, Patricia Leahy, Government Affairs, and going to actually open a vaccine distribution site at the State Street Bank location. There'll be signs up in the website and whatnot, and they're going to prioritize Quincy people first, and obviously they're going to outreach to their patients first, so don't just show up. They're going to set up a hotline over the weekend, they're going to have a web portal over the weekend, things will be set up if you're a Beth Israel patient to get information there. I'm aware that Manic Community Health Center is opening one at Crown Colony, where they're doing the testing currently.
Yeah.
Old Colony.
Right.
I only went to St. Anne's. I should remember this stuff.
It's right behind. It was right behind it.
I know. I remember. See, I'm old enough to remember the Howard Johnson factory that back there.
Right. Yeah.
And the pickle lily order to get putting out. So Old Colony, where the old Howard Johnson's factory is
yes.
The what we now call the old Eastern Nazarene office buildings.
Yes.
You know, they're it's a testing site. Currently, they're going to convert that to a vaccine site with Manic Community Health Care. I do not have any more information on that either. I suspect that you will probably have as part of your news updates daily, we'll have more information than I do going to this weekend. I'm hoping that we will have more information that we can put on our social media once we have a definitive information to go up. All we got is what little I have, and we're waiting for more communication.
So, yeah, the city is working on both a phone number and a website for folks to sign up. So as soon as we have that, we'll, of course, let everybody know. And I know that, so BI, that is not, that's going to be for everybody, though, right, in the state, not just Quincy people?
You're going to start with Quincy people as a priority.
Okay, all right. And, I mean, most of it is empty right now, right? Everybody's working from home mostly, so.
That's correct. So they're going to use, I'm not sure which building yet, but more details are to come. But okay. They're definitely going to be North Quincy. They are prioritizing Quincy folks. Obviously, they're prioritizing their most vulnerable BI folks first. So people age 65 and over, people with healthcare are going to get the first reach out. My mother, as we talked about more than once, is 78. She has cancer. So we're waiting for Tufts Medical Center in our case because her oncologist, and she's also a Mayo patient. But, you know, there was, we discussed also, it was a different comfort level about we're going to get the vaccine. Yeah. So obviously consultation with your primary doctor or your, in our case, the oncologist is very important in. So you can have some comfort level, where is the best place for you to receive your vaccine.
Yeah. Now, did you sign on to the letter to the governor to request a call-in center?
No, because it's coming anyway.
Okay.
And the letter is going to get there by the time he puts it up.
Okay.
So it's one of those things you're like, he's going to do it. You got to get a letter. By the time it gets to his desk, it's already up. Welcome to State House life. This is what I deal with, folks.
Okay.
They want to file a letter, they want to file a bill. By the time they think it's a great press hit for the people at home, it's already over.
Somebody already thought of it. Okay.
Yeah. So this is State House life. Some folks in the place feel that they need to just take action as opposed to, you know, relaying a message up to COVID Command Center and tell them that, hey, you know, this is what's going on. You can just put it on your radar. If you need to do a letter, do a big press release at home, and it was going to take care of itself. By the time they finish their letter and their press release, it's already been taken care of, and okay, it's claimed victory.
Which so, just, like, the media went crazy on it because so many people are having such a hard time with the state website.
Yeah, I'm not very good at jumping on that kind of media press stuff, unlike some other colleagues who enjoy doing that, where they see any hint of bad news and decide they have to take any kind of action to show that the big ban on cap is, well, it's actually being resolved already, and pretend like they actually did something.
Okay, very good.
I'm not one of those folks. I think people who have dealt with me enough over the years knows I'm not using the press in that kind of manner where I'm running out saying, hey, you know, this, I know it's going to get fixed, but I'm going to try to take credit for it anyway.
Gotcha.
I don't do that. But I just tell people, please be patient. It's the only way I can put it right now. Be patient. Contact your primary doctor or your if you have specialty care, contact them just to be sure you have confidence in what's going on. Each place is getting different vaccines, so whether it be Pfizer or Moderna, some doctors are recommending different ones for different folks for different reasons.
Oh, okay.
It's good to have that conversation. Definitely check your emails. I've been told by Beth Israel they're going to be emailing their patients as soon as they have a schedule in place and how they're going to enroll it and which of the most high-risk people of dying will be contacted, you know, in those orders. So they're working on an internal method right now to identify their, you know, highest risk of death folks.
Okay, good to know.
So, I mean, expect a possible phone call. Definitely expect some emails. You know, different hospitals and healthcare facilities will have the web portals up, as we talked about, and the phone numbers over time. So Just be patient. February 1st is the start date. You know, people are trying to get ahead of the game. But it's also be mindful we do have a supply problem because we don't have enough vaccine.
Right.
And just dose two issue, as you've seen over the news, do we need that second dose this soon? A lot of reason that people haven't got vaccine and we have some extras because of the second dose issue.
Yep.
And other states have just burned through everything and do not have second doses available. Again, this is new science. First dose does protect you. Second dose improves the situation on protecting you. But And again, if you're, like I said, if you're a high-risk death category, for lack of a better term, obviously you want to have the highest protection.
Sure. Yeah. It's a good idea to remind folks now, too, that there are some scams out there, and you should not be having to pay, right, for a vaccine.
Yeah, great reminder again. Vaccine is free. The government is paying for it. The federal government's paying for this. I believe it's $62 per shot. I think the secretary told us. I think Medicare is picking up $45. That's how they're doing it, through the Medicare Trust Fund. I think the state's going to have to figure out how to come up the rest, but we'll figure out how to pick up the remainder. And then you cannot pay to get ahead of the line. You cannot pay to not get a shot. You cannot pay to get a shot. You don't get financial information, social security numbers, personal information, or any kind of information until you actually go to the location and get your shot.
Right.
The web portals and the phone numbers you're going to get from the government are the ones you should use. Do not use any other party's numbers. If you're not sure, call us. Not sure, call your healthcare provider to confirm that that information is the information you should be using to contact to get your vaccine. So you're not confident of information you got, call your healthcare provider or call our office and we'll try to help you out.
Great.
Which is 617-722-2014, 617-722-2014. Call us if you're not sure the number you got is right, but definitely call your healthcare provider.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's great advice. And we'll hopefully start to build, some herd immunity here over the next 6, 7, 8, 9 months or so.
Well, I saw an article, speaking of herd immunities, because we're going to digress like I always do in these things. I need to read a whole article. I only got like parts of a headline. One country is, I think it's Malaysia, I think. I have to look it up again. It's looking to inoculate healthy people before the vulnerable people, because people who are healthy are still carriers despite not having symptoms.
Interesting.
The logic is actually interesting. It's very inverse logic. The logic is that if you inoculate healthy folks who are carriers who do not present symptoms first, you create herd immunity among them, and the vulnerable populations have a much lower risk of getting COVID because the people that are carrying the virus are unable to
transmit it. Yeah, interesting. That is very interesting. And also the people who are carrying it but are asymptomatic are just out in the community more, right? Just they're not sick.
I've heard yet another person got COVID, and yes, they were asymptomatic, and yes, they were basically a walking spreader.
Yeah. Interesting. I'd be curious to see how that pans out.
Yeah, I'm actually kind of curious too. I got to look up the article again as I'm reading random news. It is a very curious way of going about this, because our logic is, well, we got to help the people who are going to die first. The logic there is that we can help the people who die first by ensuring they can never get the disease from someone that's an unknown carrier.
Right. Yep. Yep.
So
now there's you fly in the ointment of these variants of COVID-19.
Yeah, as we've seen by the news articles, and you've seen by England in particular, the United Kingdom, Britain, I love the fact it has like 5 different definitions of a country. Because it's an island nation, that universal health care and the hospital system cannot handle the load. They've already, like Massachusetts, they already had ramped up the entire health care system to prepare for wave 2, and it's getting overwhelmed very quickly. So, obviously they have taken the most severe measures, complete total lockdown, shut down and travel and so forth. I mean, much more heavy than we've done, and it's still battling it. And they have that higher contagious level, which can be between 40 and 70%. I know 40% comes up a lot, but it's like potentially up to 70% more contagious. You have the variant in Brazil, the variant in South Africa. These variants have already traveled the planet, despite the fact we have limited travel.
Right.
A lot of travel is very limited, very little leisure travel, very little business travel, but it's still a lot of cargo travel.
Oh, true.
Food, goods, all kinds of movement of mail. People are still moving around the planet. So give you an idea of the level of contagiousness, despite the global reduction in travel. These variants still made its way to the U.S. from South Africa and England and Brazil, made its way to places like South Korea. I mean, this thing is that contagious. And the asymptomatic nature of it, makes it such a great danger. And, right now, what we see in the news, it doesn't appear to be more deadly. The problem is that if it spreads faster, it just makes it more deadly automatically.
Right. Yep.
And, you know, there's some question about whether or not the South African variant is actually more deadly. And people are trying to figure out specifically whether the scientists are able to figure out specifically whether the variant in South Africa is tougher than the vaccine is able to do. So it basically, the vaccine already does teach your body what to look for to kill it, or a very simple definition. Is the South African variant sufficiently different that your body won't recognize the killer?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think that's the simplest way I can put it, which is why we always say, and I say again, even if you're vaccinated, wash your hands. You can still be a carrier because the virus can be in the outside of your body.
Right.
It is unknown how long it takes to kill the virus in your body. So if you have it in your lungs and you breathe it out before your body kills it all, you're still a carrier.
Right.
Hence, wear your mask. Use your hand sanitizer. Wash your hands. Keep your distance still, even if you're vaccinated. Okay? So this is the question with the South African virus, which, to, you know, reading the news, they're trying to figure out, because if it's sufficiently different enough that your body doesn't rapidly recognize, kill this, then we have a bit of a problem. So the efficacy rate, you know, would not be as good if not everyone body knows through the vaccine to kill that virus.
Yeah. So much still unknown because it's all still so very new. So we're, you know, as the mayor said to me once, we're kind of building the plane as we're flying it.
Oh yeah. We're building it. We're flying it. Well, it's falling on fire. I mean, this has kind of been the way it's been going. Thankfully, it sounds like we did put out the fire and we're not falling, but we're still not riding a smooth ride.
Yeah.
As we talk more than once, every time I'm on this podcast with you, everything I said from last week seems to go out the window. So, I mean, if you want to take advantage of political faux-pas, I mean, this is the whole 40 plus videos of me every week probably not being right, because next week a new information comes up.
Right. Yeah. So let's switch gears a little bit, talk about something we haven't talked about in a long time, Tacky, the census. And the city clerk here in Quincy tells me that possibly they may be reopening the federal census. Have you heard anything about that?
Oh God.
I guess not. It's up to the new administration, but that's what she's hearing.
That would be interesting, because under the Constitution, it requires a headcount of the decade. We're not in that decade anymore. I don't know how that would work, to be honest with you, because the Constitution is pretty clear when the count has to occur.
Okay, so there would have to be an amendment, probably, an act of Congress.
Really don't know how that would work, quite frankly. They could continue a count, but it wouldn't apply to things like redistricting.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, okay. Continue a count, and it could still be used for like federal formulas based on population. You know, it could be used for obviously scientific data or demographic data for historians and things like that as well. But I'm not sure you can actually do that for redistricting, because that's the first point of the decennial, is it the quintennial is the word? Every decade census,
yeah,
is for redistricting purposes. The estimate right now is that we are short like 1,900 people from 2019. So we are actually, yeah, because it wasn't, you don't actually do a real count between the decades. You do statistical sampling and do the analysis. The statistical sampling showed that 2019, we should have more people than actual count in 2020,
yeah.
Actual count. And I know it's like 1,900 people or so, it doesn't sound like a big deal, but it is a big deal because every person's needed regarding ensuring our proper representation in Congress.
Right.
Some states like California definitely lost population. Some places like Texas picked up population. Some small states picked up some population because of just people migrating and birth rates. So I actually do not know. That actually is curious, because we know they can keep counting. That's not the issue.
Okay.
The issue is, you know, what is the count we're going to use to determine the districts?
Okay.
And that's a very good question. Again, we're hoping that we got to 100,000 people in Quincy, because it changes our HUD formulas immensely in terms of grant funds. And it actually has an incredibly positive ripple effect to get to 100,000 people in Quincy. But I mean, the state as a whole, Massachusetts as a whole, really needs to keep the count up because I don't want to lose a congressman. Because I have to vote on that. If, in case you were wondering, if we lose a congressman, the legislature decides how to cut those congressional districts. So we end up picking who loses or forces a two people to run in the same district situation.
Right, right.
So I'd rather not find myself in that position to do that a second time, because we already did that a decade ago when we lost Congressman Oliver.
Mm-hmm.
When we basically took the Berkshires and everything in Western Mass and created a monster district for Congressman Neal, who's now the House Chairman of Ways and Means. So that kind of worked out for us. So it'd be, yeah, you know, people at home like, oh, that's not a big deal. Well, you don't have to field, you know, calls from people on a state level regarding saving their congressional districts.
Right, right, right. All right. Well, stay tuned for that one then. Do you have your committee assignments yet, Jackie?
No, we do not. We did some temporary rules on Wednesday. We had a session Wednesday. And the temporary rules, too, we did one for the continuation of the emergency rules we're operating around with some caveats. So, for example, as we talked about, you know, basically flying a plane while building it, while smoking on fire on it and the whole thing. And we discovered last year we had some problems with virtual dial-in through Microsoft 365. One is we keep getting dropped on calls. Another is that I get buzzing sounds every so often. And sometimes you just keep saying stuff, but no one hears you, but you don't know for 10 minutes.
Oh, okay. That's a problem. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're using Microsoft 360, folks. If you guys are doing this at your business, and we're trying to do our secured conference calls this way, and the technology is hardly perfect. It's all by voice, not by video. So we have to, no joke, sometimes we, you know, chatter just to ensure that people are still on the line, because Silence is not a good sign.
Right, right.
But we also can hear the entire debate via the telephone. It's out of sync with the computer, so we don't turn the computers on because it's going to be short by about 45 seconds of the delay. So everything's very focused on listening as opposed to watching. And I like to watch things because I'm a visual person.
Mm-hmm.
So listening actually requires a lot more concentration. So we made some corrections to the rules that we discovered that were problematic, such as addressing technology problems, reflect properly that you can still have access to all the rules and privileges allowed within reason. So certain things like points of parliamentary procedure questions, points of interest questions, you know, unanimous consent to make a statement things, you know, we put those in there. And because you're working virtually, we need a mechanism by which you can announce you want to make these a statement. So you have to contact a monitor who is in the state house, who's a representative, who's your monitor on the phone, and establish means of communication. So text messaging while on the phone has been critical for all of us. To relay to our monitors that, hey, I got a point of parliamentary inquiry. You know, this is what it is. Please inform the chair. And then they have to inform the chair, then they have to patch us through, then they have to dial a separate number.
How cumbersome is that? Yeah, wow.
You can see the challenges of the session we're having, and while we're not the most speediest folks, I'll fully admit to that, it is even slower than normal.
Yeah.
We have to sign up before we debate. They changed the rules regarding on sign up on the fly during the budget, associated consolidated amendments, but they also made it more clear regarding how many statements you can make on an issue regarding one specific amendment, for example, one specific bill. So that there's more clarity in that area. They did some stuff regarding some more clarity on time and time for debates and things like that. And when we're opening session, you know, no later than 10 a.m. No, we can't go past midnight without unanimous consent of the membership. We tweak the emergency rules to be effective to the end of the fiscal year. End of the first half of this first 6 months of the session, mm-hmm. which we're in July. So we pushed these emergency rules in July with the hope maybe we come to semi in-person functionality in the second half of this year. We hope. We're hoping.
A lot of hope this year, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. We're Microsoft 360. We're learning as we go. Even if we are able to come back in person, I suspect it will not be in large numbers at one time. I think at some level, at home work is here to stay.
Oh, I agree. Yeah, I think that's very true. Or some combination. Yeah.
Yeah, in the white collar industries in particular, I think at some level, not everybody, but I mean, I think a substantial number of businesses and government will implement some type of work at stay home. And, you know, this is actually good for us in implementing our secure systems for remote work, which means I can access documents on my server. We just got it over Christmas time. So I can access documents on the server. I can access my archive email while not at the office through the secure VPN, encrypted, et cetera, system that we're using from the house. Which is great because when I go on vacation, I can access all my work from my cell phone now.
Oh, what fun will that be?
Which is great. Just wonderful that no matter where I am on the planet now, I can get to all my work as long as I can get an internet signal somehow. So that's a positive point of this.
Well, it's a double-edged sword for sure. Yeah, no question.
Oh, that's very true. Yeah. So, you know, I think we will, as I said before, I think we're going to continue to work this way throughout the rest of the year. I do think that we'll maybe hopefully have some partial something going on in the second half. But then again, you know, we don't know how this vaccine is going to work in terms of we need more boosters to go along. How long does your body remember to kill this virus or to blueprint out of this virus? And there's also the continuation effect that when are we going to reach herd immunity?
Yeah. Well, all questions, no answers right now, right?
Yeah, we want a even distribution. So, I mean, if you got 70% of the population vaccinated, but if they're all located in California, that doesn't do us any good in Massachusetts, right? You know, same thing in the city of Quincy. If you have 70,000 people, for example, vaccinated, you still don't have that 30%. But let's say Weymouth only has 10% vaccination, there's no herd immunity, and we don't. We transverse borders. It isn't like we're contained in a fishbowl here. So it is very important, I think, on a regional, national level, that this herd immunity issue occurs through vaccination. And if one segment of the country and one community does not reach a high level of vaccination, it only negative impacts everybody else.
That's right. People travel. That's exactly right.
Exactly. We learned nothing else from COVID. It's all about movement. And then we still have to think about the children, which clinical testing has already began. Well, we do know that children are lower suffer severe illnesses. They do, but it's lower, and they have a very low death rate. They also are carriers. They can be carriers with mild symptoms, which can give it to you. So that vaccine for the kids are very important. In the rough estimate in Massachusetts, we have to vaccinate 4.1 million adults. You know, if we get 100,000 doses of vaccine a week, somebody able to do that, you're still talking, 40 some odd weeks or more? I mean, that's assuming you get that many doses, assuming you actually have the capacity to implement that many doses a week. You know, that's like the super ideal situation. That's 40 weeks. I mean, the year's almost over.
That's right. Yeah. It's going to be a marathon, not a sprint for sure.
Yeah. So my joke about getting vaccine in October may not be that far off.
That might not be so funny after all. Yeah, exactly.
So I digress. So the second thing we did on rules was opening an order to have the rules committee review our current rules that we're operating regarding its efficiency and procedures to see if there's any updates because of the way we operate today. We've learned some lessons from COVID, so it doesn't hurt to see how much of the things we learned from COVID can be implemented into our regular rules going forward once we get out of COVID. And secondly, to look into looking to lobbyists who are lobbying, who aren't registered lobbyists. So there have been over the past couple of years, there have been folks in the building have expressed concerns about individuals who are basically being paid by organizations to lobby us on various things, but are not registered lobbyists. In Massachusetts, if you spend 15% of your work time lobbying us or any government agency, includes cities and towns and counties and federal government, well, the federal government has all kinds of other ones. So basically cities, towns, county, and us, you have to register lobbyists. I believe it's 15% of your work time.
Okay.
As a result, not surprising, if you look at the lobbying book, it's extraordinarily long because big corporations are very hesitant to violate the law. So, for example, you have CEOs, COOs, CFOs of many big corporations who are registered lobbyists, but we never see any of them. They do it as an abundance of caution in case they need to come testify, in case they need to speak to legislators on a more frequent basis for a short period of time. They do it as a precaution. So we actually have a very long lobby list, but people who are actually engaged in lobbying is probably less than 200 folks.
Okay.
But that's kind of inside baseball for everybody. So you pull up the lobbying book and the Secretary of State's website, the list, you see, oh my God, there's so many lobbyists. Well, yeah, but of the people that actually show up in the building regularly, you know, it's, you know, less than 200. People who are really regulars are less than 100.
Okay.
People, you know, true career lobbyists, not just government affairs for a business, like the ARP as a government affairs person.
Right. Yep.
They lobbyists, but it isn't like their job is to be there every single day.
I see.
That's less than 100. So there were concerns being expressed on whether, you know, we can actually better identify folks who are not complying with the law, because the only way we know they don't comply is that we have to find them. And we've been receiving folks, well, including myself, receiving from different folks, we can't identify who they are because they're not in the lobbying book.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so they're lobbying us not as citizen lobbyists. So if you come to my office and say, hey, Tacky, I want to talk about an issue. Oh, sure, Joe, let's sit down and chat. You're lobbying me, folks. Right. I mean, that's called special interest group. You come and talk about anything, you're now become a special interest group. There's no, don't be like, oh, no, I'm special because I'm not a special interest group. No, you're a special interest group now. And you want to talk about an issue, you're officially lobbying. The difference is that if you're being paid to do so by your business to push an agenda forward versus being a private citizen, that's different.
Gotcha.
So Sierra Club is my favorite example because they're the ones who want to do this the most. They lobby their members to come see us and talk about stuff. It should be once a year, twice a year. They do that. But the citizen actually volunteers to do that. And they're not like trained employees. They're kind of like, here's a fact sheet, go and talk to folks.
Yeah.
And we are talking about, honestly, I mean, people who visit my office knows a couple of issues. We talk about what's going on in your neighborhood. We check in your family. We talk about all kinds of other issues beyond just that. What's happening is some organizations are now basically training people to work on their behalf to lobby us. So it's no longer a, you know, would you like to visit a legislator about an important issue? It's up to you if you want to do it. No, it's a whole, we're going to train you and send you in unpaid, the keywords unpaid, to lobby.
Oh, okay. So not really a lobbyist, but also that's their only mission.
That's the only mission, is to train other good lobby on their behalf, uncompensated. And of course, people training them are compensated. So what do we have here now?
So why would someone do that if they weren't being paid?
Well, because we live in a fervent political times at the moment.
Okay.
And the need for righteous causes, in spite of who you support in the political party, I think most of us who are observers and reasonable folks, I would believe we're reasonable folks, you know, see that people have really clung on to truths or untruths. I'm trying to be very polite about this now. That will invigorate them to want to take this type of training to propel someone else's agenda unknowingly.
Oh, okay.
Perhaps knowingly, but I would tell you most likely unknowingly what the rest of the agenda is, because people they talk to think they know what's going on.
Gotcha.
And then, of course, we do these podcasts. I tell you how things work.
Right.
And I've done this with some folks in my life in the past, and thing they hate the most dealing with me, which is why I don't like calling me, is I'll actually ask a question. They're very used to the experience of people just sitting there nodding. I don't nod. I like to ask.
And well, that's the only way to really find out, right?
Yeah, it's amazing how you get offended by asking a question. It's like, you know, you're here to listen to us. I'm like, yeah, I am. I got a question, though. And
You can't take action if you don't know where they're coming from and what they're looking for.
Well, it's called a discussion. I mean, no one likes me talked at. I mean, I've been talked at, you know, everyone has that experience at some level. And sometimes you do it accidentally. But I mean, we try very hard not to talk at people. I think as a culture, we try to. It happens sometimes by accident, but we try not to. you know, the legislature only works if we facilitate conversation. And one thing that a lot of new legislators find out the first year is what they thought the place would be, what it really is, two different things. So they remind folks, this ain't West Wing by any stretch of imagination. And as you have conversation with folks, you learn how things work. And it's a kind of a passing knowledge, you know, institutional knowledge. You pass it from one person next, you pass it to the next person next. And as the building changes, always change, not just in people, but in operations. COVID has shown we had to change. Mm-hmm. You know, we will continue to pass that knowledge on. But if you don't have anybody to pass it on, you have no passage of knowledge. It's no different from anything else in life. The government is no different. So there's a benefit for people, senior members, to pass knowledge to junior members who then become senior members who pass knowledge to new junior members, and the cycle continues.
Sure. Yeah. Can we switch gears a little bit, Tacky, talk about the governor's budget proposal and what that might include for Quincy?
Well, the governor put out a budget 6 weeks after signing the budget for last cycle.
Yeah, well, so, those are a little slow.
Yeah,
you're a little slow. Things got pushed ahead. I know you were on a monthly budget basis late last year.
Oh, absolutely. It's been one of those years. And I think that part of the joint rules conversation for the bigger joint rules, not the emergency rooms, discussing about moving some of the internal dates and budget processes mm-hmm. to reflect the current COVID crisis also. So that I know that's in conversation because we ran into a problem in rules last year regarding the dates or due dates in internal rules. So the governor's budget is about $45 billion. It's not much bigger than the budget he signed last time. It's about the same. We're projecting about $30 billion in income tax revenue. The federal government still contributes, as you can tell, it's $45 billion minus 30. We get less than $2 billion in fees and stuff like in the lottery, but lottery really just goes straight to local aid. I don't get to spend money. That money goes straight to your city's town. So yeah. The mayor spends that money in the council. So
right.
That's where your lottery money went. So don't talk to me how that goes.
Okay.
Talk to them. You know, the federal government still becomes a very big partner of over $12 billion of our budget is from defense, largely Medicare, Medicaid reimbursement. And hopefully with the Biden administration and a Democratic Congress, we'll receive more COVID assistance at minimum, hopefully, as the year goes along. Obviously, we would like more federal assistance, but we'll take anything. Mm-hmm. I've witnessed before. The budget continues to follow the same pattern of putting the MBTA, the school building assistance grant, and the pension liability first on the list of money to be taken out first. So with the $30 billion income taxes, we're looking at probably about 26-ish billion of actual money that we can use. A lot of funding, it's actually COVID related. No big surprise. We did it last term, we're doing this term. The big change here is that he's actually going to try to implement education funding reform that we
approved
and suspended. So he's going to go for implementation there. He wants to try to raise revenue through implementation sports gambling. He wants to raise revenue through a cashless lottery, which means, you know, we have legislation looking at debit cards to buy lottery tickets via debit cards, not credit cards. He's looking to get some money again by suspending the charitable deduction on your income taxes again. So we suspended it for this fiscal year. He wants to suspend it for next fiscal year. And he's looking to draw another $1 billion down from the Rainy Day Fund. Just a reminder for folks, the Rainy Day Fund going into COVID was about $3.5 billion. We drained about a billion plus out of the Rainy Day Fund. To balance us with budget. So it's about $2.5 billion, give or take, billion-ish dollars. The governor draws yet another $1 billion to balance his budget. So that shows that we are projecting, obviously our projections still continue a revenue shortfall if we have to draw for rainy day. No more rainy day money went into the fund last year because we took the capital gains tax, which is only going to rainy day fund. All capital gains goes to rainy day, was spent last year to balance the budget. So the Rainy Day Fund did not have an additional because we just drew and took the money that was supposed to go that way into Rainy Day. Mm-hmm. So they're obviously withdrawing from those funds. We are not expecting strong tax revenues based on prior year projection. We're expecting better, but not strong enough. And COVID has increased all our costs just because of the nature of COVID.
Sure.
And we don't expect that to stop anytime soon. So At this stage, the governor's budget is a recommendation. It is not the budget. The budget starts in the House. So I like books, you know, this is where it really begins. And we're probably going to use the same revenue consensus number, about $30 billion, and build off of there. And the hard debate's going to really be about how much rainy day fund we're going to use, because we don't know how people are going to get federal assistance. And we don't know what the outcome of the pandemic will be as we move through the summer. We all want it to be better, but you'd need to have resources in case it goes bad. Plus, we must maintain the current system we're living in now. So all the services you have plus COVID is what we need to try to maintain. And given the governor wants to implement education funding reform, we're going to be under a lot of pressure to do so. So we're going to have to figure out how to implement education funding reform too.
And that's what, $1 billion?
Yeah, essentially $1 billion. To the city of Quincy, now I'm going to remember math in my head, but I believe it's $8 million more in education funding a year. I think it's eight. And the governor's office is expecting a very robust lottery. He's expecting $1 billion in level lottery revenue. You guys, it doesn't take hard to figure out. You guys all figured out that the lottery was impacted by pandemic, right? Mm-hmm. No casino, because no restaurant and bars. People are traveling less. A lottery ticket was not a priority item at the store when you're shopping. You know, obviously we're stocking up. So there was an impact. But because of the Mega Millions Powerball, shows that we're coming, you know, people are buying tickets again, even though it was a long draw because not a lot of tickets were bought early on. It shows that, you know, nationally there is some movement again. So I think the government may be a little optimistic at $1 billion. I think maybe close to 950, 970 maybe realistic, but we continue to hope for the best.
Okay.
So, you know, stay tuned as the House goes through the budget process. I'm waiting for our regular meeting, the Ways and Means Chairman, which is probably going to be done in this format for less than 15 minutes. I talk extremely fast, and we email the priority list to them for a first peek. And as committee chair, I hope, we hope, since I don't have assignment, whatever the chair is, obviously I have to look at the budget of the agencies I oversee as well and make recommendations to the Ways and Means Committee about what my thoughts are regarding the agencies the committee interacts with. So there's that factor also. So stay tuned as we continue to do these Friday talks. We'll probably be talking budget more and more as we get closer and closer.
All right. Sounds good. This is the point in the program where we let folks know how to get a hold of you.
Yep. You got the phone number a bit early, but we'll do it again. 617-722-2014, 617-722-2014. I am aware that some constituents had a little issue with the phone system, but push anybody and leave a message. Don't worry about what the job description is. Just push anybody on the staff. We'll get the voicemail. You know, send me an email, tacky.chan@mahouse.gov, tacky.chan@mahouse.gov. My mailbox is now starting to get filled with people asking for bills and bill requests. So we do prioritize people with immediate needs. And right now, we're still getting a lot of unemployment requests, issues, all kinds of problems we've got to ask in the system, whatever heard from a while, they sent the documents in, and they're having some problems with customer service, essentially. That continues to be the real number one email and phone calls we're getting. We do put a lot of public information at the public public social media, my Facebook, and Tacky Chan, State Representative Tacky Chan on Facebook. Don't forget the E in Tacky. That's happening. I've discovered for folks.
Oh, really?
But you can find it. Yeah, just you can Google it. It comes up. You don't need to own a Facebook account. Just keep scrolling down. We put a lot of stuff up there. Do not. If you're my friend on Facebook, there's nothing for you. I'm sorry. Just go to the public site.
Okay.
We're not going to start. We tried doing double posting early in COVID and realized this is just unnecessary. We have a public Facebook site. Please join and use it. Tackychain.org. Again, we have a website. We're going to try to update that as soon as we get new information. And of course, you know, we have QATV with you. We put the links up on the website. So if you want to see everything I said that was wrong before, you can find them there. We do put the links up on our website.
Yes, okay.
You can help yourself and okay. See the corrections the week after. Or watch how my hair grows. Whatever makes you want to work for you.
Right.
So those are the number ways you can contact me. And we are still getting, you know, the inundation calls right now really is continuation of the
yeah. Well, yeah, and of course, the big news, Bethesda Leahy coming to State Street here in Quincy, right, for a vaccination clinic.
Yeah, that is the big news. So if you're a Bethesda Leahy patient, be a little bit patient through this weekend on getting an email from them regarding prioritization of vaccine access based on doses available. You think about it, it's not a lot of doses when you think about how to distribute doses around the state as equitably as possible. If you're, again, if you're a person that has a comorbidity, serious health issue, I can't say that word.
Oh, you said it. That was pretty good. That was good.
Was that was close enough?
Yeah.
If you have two or more of those issues, definitely contact your primary physician to find out where that status is, particularly if you're like part of doctor's group. And if you're uncomfortable on your choices in terms of like a pharmacy or Gillette, you know, definitely pick a healthcare setting that works for you. I do advise that. So if you need to be at the hospital setting or hospital operated setting, be patient and do so. In the meantime, wear your mask, wash your hands, everything I've been saying every single week. Keep that up, even if you are vaccinated. Because if you're a senior citizen, you got vaccinated, doesn't mean you still can't be a carrier and affect your children or your grandchildren.
Right.
So it's no guarantee. And is it you and me, or do we know more people with COVID than the first time?
It's funny you say that, Tacky, because I was thinking it seems to be getting closer to my circle of people than it was the first time around. Yes, I would agree with that.
Yeah, the 7 degrees of separation of Kevin Bacon seems to be shrinking very quickly.
Yeah, I don't know why that is, but I think it is. Yeah, I think a lot of people are experiencing that too.
And I think people should have greater cause for concern given the fact that you know more people or you have more people closer to COVID indicates exactly how more infectious this is. And we didn't do a lot full lockdown this time. I mean, it was even a full lockdown last time. It was like a 90% lockdown.
Yeah.
But I mean, we didn't even do a full 90% lockdown this time. And that gives you an idea how a difference makes of a 2 or 4 week lockdown versus a much more moderate lockdown we had this time and the impact of each. So, we've had several more members in the House contract COVID. So, I mean, we got that noted, my colleagues and so forth. And, I have personal responsibility to my family and, I'm not bringing this disease home at all if I can help it. So, everyone, please be safe, be well. And there is light at the tunnel someplace. It's just the light is not that bright yet. That's all. But it'll get brighter later.
That's right. Thanks, Tacky. Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you. Talk to you in a week.
All right. Bye-bye.